We're going to continue to talk a little bit now about the first 3-4 years of Rabbi Nachman's life, what we see from the Svarim, specifically from Rabbi Nachman, what Rabbi Nachman heard Rabbi Nachman himself tell over. And we're going to begin to learn the first Torah. So I made around 40 copies. I know some of you have Lukut Moran, but I made of the first page of Lukut Moran some copies. So just that you'll have, you should get to maybe at the end a little bit. I care why. For those who don't have this, as I said, it's Kedai. When you come, it's Kedai to always come with Lukut Moran. First of all, it looks good when you walk with it. It looks very good. It's very impressive. Yeah, Lukut Moran. Wow. And then if we look at it, it's even better, right? I feel that it's very important that we start to learn the first Torah before Chanukah, even though he doesn't mention a word about Chanukah. But the whole Torah from beginning to end is filled with Chanukah. And Bechlal, as I mentioned last week, I want to be able to go back and forth from saying over in Yonim of his life and seeing how that's Mezgala, how beautifully and amazingly it's revealed in his Torahs, all that he was and all that he went through, how it comes out in his Torahs. And then we'll spend some years going through Torahs. Then the truth is that we could just spend the next 20 years on the first Torah. But we have to try to get a little bit of a taste from different places in the Sefer. We were talking about the birth of Rabbi Nachman and the Hishtalshelus of the family, the whole story, and how the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh saw and prepared the way for that Shidduch in his family, that he dafka wanted to make sure that the Neshama of Rabbi Nachman would be from him. And we're going to see that the connection between Rabbi Nachman and his illustrious great-grandfather was one that made an unbelievable impact on him as a child, and would be with him throughout his entire life. Obviously, being raised in such a family, we spoke a little bit about his father, Reb Simcha, was a hidden tzaddik, and his mother, Fegele, a balas ruach hakodesh. In addition to that, we also learned that Rabbi Nachman actually was born and grew up in the Baal Shem Tov's house. That house was given, as we learned last week, was given to his parents as a Yerusha. They received the house from the Holy Baal Shem Tov. And as a result of that, this had become a place that was a Mokam Asifa. It was a gathering place for the growing movement of the Talmud Baal Shem Tov. Over the years, as Chassidus grew from a small little chabura that surrounded the Baal Shem, and then afterwards Mezid Shemagid, and as the Talmidim of Mezid Shemagid went, the famous Tzaddikim and Talmidim went to different places throughout Europe, throughout Eastern Europe, they would return from time to time to Mezhbiz, to the birthplace of Chassidus, in order to be able to spend time by the tzin, by the grave of the Holy Baal Shem. And when they would come to Mezhbiz, they would spend time in the house of the Baal Shem Tov. And from there they would go to the cemetery, to the grave. And therefore, it's hard for regular mortals like us to imagine what that must have been like being a child in such a home, and the kind of tzaddikim who were passing through that place, and the impressions that it made on a child who from the time that he could talk, which we understand was from a very, very early age of infancy, who had an unbelievably rich imagination and a fiery soul. It's hard for us to be mishar to even have a hasaga of the kind of impression it made upon him when he saw and he listened to the conversations, the Torahs, the stories that he heard in the house as a child. In addition to that, Rabbi Nachman never forgot anything that he ever heard, ever. And therefore we have stories and Torahs that he gave over, things that he heard when he was 2 years old, a year and a half, 2 years old, 3 years old. We have stories and Torahs that he heard as a child. And we know of the Hakaras HaTayr, the great gratitude that he had to these illustrious Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov and the disciples of the Mezuzah Magid. He had a Hakaras HaTayr throughout his entire life, that they opened up his heart and his eyes and his heart to the way of Chassidus. And we know of a Maisa that happened when he was 3 years old, that a group of great tzaddikim were staying in the house and spending some time going back and forth to the cemetery, to the Baal Shem Tov's grave. And the child Nachman heard that they were planning to go together, this group of tzaddikim, to visit the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, the famous disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, who at that time was already very old, and it was a short time before his death. And Rabbi Nachman, of course, knew of the Toldos. Everybody knew of the Toldos. And that's the first Chassidish Sefer, actually, of course, the Toldos Yaakov Yosef. And when he heard that they were planning this trip, he wanted desperately to go. And he was under the table listening to all of this. He was a little boy. And when they were leaving, he jumped out and he started to cry that he wants to go with them. And they said that we can't take you. He's a little boy, he's a little child. This is not, you know, they're not going on the Long Island Railroad. This is a difficult journey. It's a difficult journey. And the last thing in the world that they want to have to worry about is a little kid tagging along, and they couldn't. Whether or not his parents would allow, we don't know, but the tzaddikim themselves said, we can't take responsibility for a little boy on such a trip. So what happened was that as they were preparing to leave, Rabbi Nachman went over to the wagon and he lied down and he put himself in the wheel of the wagon. He lied down across the opening, and he was a little kid, and he lied down inside the wheel of the wagon. And he refused to leave. He refused to get up. And this is something that we're going to see later on throughout his life, this quality of akshanis, of stubbornness, when it came to something holy. Even though Ben Odmah Chavero, we're going to talk a lot about that, when it came to his dealings with people, Rabbi Nachman never ever used akshanis, stubbornness. He was very much against that. Ad kedei kach, that it was hard, oftentimes it was hard for the Talmidim to get a clear etzer from him, because when they would ask him something, he would say, that's what you want to do, so do it. That's what you want, so do it. And they would have to prod and pull and kvetch until he would finally say, this is what you should do. He wasn't in action at all with people, but when it came to Avodas Hashem, when it came to serving God, the akshanis, his stubbornness, was something which was unbelievable. He wouldn't move. So as a child, he was lying down in the wheel, and he said, you could run me over. I'm not leaving unless you take me. And the tzaddikim were tumulting what to do, and to go get his mother and father to get him out of here. And Reb Chaim Krasner, the great tzaddik Reb Chaim Krasner, was from the older Talmidim of the Baal Shem, Reb Chaim Krasner. He reached down, and he grabbed Nachman by his hand, and he pulled him onto the wagon. And he told one of the fellows there, go tell his parents we'll take him. That such akshanis, such stubbornness, is something which is very holy, and we'll take the child. And Reb Chaim Krasner said that he told his mother and father that he'll take personal responsibility to see to it that he'll be properly fed and so on, and to look after him. For the rest of his life, Rabbi Nachman used to say that because of Reb Chaim Krasner, he has a Hakaras HaTov to Reb Chaim Krasner, that he was zeichet to see once in his life the face of the Holy Toldos as a child, and that he never forgot that, and he never forgot what he heard from the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, and it gave him chizik through his entire life. this is an important story because, as I said a moment ago, it's the beginning of Rabbi Nachman. And at the beginning we see already the akshanis, as I just mentioned, the stubbornness, and the gagum, and the longing for holiness, the longing for God, even as a child, which was his trademark, and we're going to speak about it a lot, and we're going to learn a lot about it in Likutei Moran, his gagum, his cheshek for Hashem. And here we now can understand how there was one particular story that he heard about his great-grandfather, about the Baal Shem Tov, that he would say over the course of his life that this story was the one that actually changed his life. And he was a little boy. Again, we're talking about 3-4 years old when he heard this. And this story, that what happened to the Baal Shem Tov, was mamish Rabbi Nachman. We can understand that the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh knew that that neshama had to be brought into his mishpacha. And what was the story that changed his life? Some years ago, we spent around the year talking about the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh and learning the tzavos, harivash, that was in the old shul, and we learned. The Baal Shem Tov's father was also a very great and hidden tzaddik, Eliezer. When the Baal Shem Tov was born, his father was 100 years old. Eliezer was 100 years old. And his mother died when he was born. The Baal Shem Tov had no recollection of his mother. Even though there are some stories about with his mother, but Lamaise, it doesn't seem possible that Baal Shem Tov knew his mother unless with his, you know, what he heard about his mother, or Ruach HaKaidish, but it was a short time after he was born, either during birth or a short time after he was born, the Baal Shem Tov, that his mother, Sarah, passed away. The father died also when the Baal Shem Tov was a little boy. And we have the tzavar, we have the last words that Rabbi Eliezer, the Baal Shem Tov's father, told him before he died. Sollst wissen, ach ich darf jetzt da weggehen von der Welt. He said to the little boy, you should know that my time has come, my time has come to leave the world. And then he said, he said, do not be afraid, my child, do not be afraid of anything. Don't be afraid of anything. This is the way the Baal Shem Tov said it. His father told him, don't be afraid of anything. From Gornish Shrekin. Kashem is Baruch Maloi Chal Haaretz Kevoida. The Baruch Shalom fills the entire world. The Tamit Titzayah Bedaitacha, and always, always picture in your mind. Ki hu yizbarach itcha, imcha, ve'etzlecha. That Hashem Yizbarach is always by you, with you, and together with you. Val Kain, his father said, k'sha'at etzarech la'izadavar. In the years that will come, that will follow, when you need anything, Al tevakesh mishum nivra shebe'olam. Do not ask any creature in the world, don't ask any human being. Rak mimenu yizbarach. Ask only God. Umi'acha she'ein shum etzias b'lodav yizbarach klal. And his father said, since there is in fact nothing besides Hashem, become accustomed to speaking to Hashem in your own words. And throughout your life, go only with Him, with Hashem. Walk always with Him. These were his final words. The Baal Shem Tov was a child. He had not a mother and a father. He was a Yosem. And he went out and he told the people that his father passed away. And after the Levaya, we don't know exactly, but we know that the Baal Shem Tov became a Nova Nodniker as a child. Again, we're not going to go over the whole history of the Baal Shem Tov and who took care of him after his parents died. For some time, different people in the town. It's not clear that there was any family there. We know that he went in horrible, horrible poverty, terrible tsaros, and we know that he was put into a cheder with a fabisna, broken melamed, and the suffering that he went through there. And the Baal Shem Tov said in the later years that he didn't forget for a moment those last words of his father that were his tzavar. And that's the only way that he was able to survive those years, where he never slept in a town twice. He went from one village to the other, and he ended up oftentimes just sleeping in the woods, being by himself. And he was mischazek, he was strengthened always with that savor of tamit tzayir b'daitecha, don't be afraid of anything. Only picture in your mind that he is with you, he's together with you at every moment, and only ask him for what you need. And the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh became a mizbeidet, a very lonely child whose companionship was with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anybody who's ever stepped foot into the world of Rabbi Nachman from Breslov knows that the aside of all of Rabbi Nachman's teachings was this hizbeidetus, was being alone with Hashem and being able to speak to Hashem, and knowing that there's no one in the world that can help you, and there's no one who loves you as much and whom you could speak to as openly as Hashem is Baruch. This story that he heard from the mishpacha, he heard this from his parents. This that he heard from the Baal Shem Tov would become the cornerstone of his entire being, of his entire Torah, this whole way of looking at the world. And he believed this to be the most authentic teaching of the Holy Baal Shem Tov, the teaching of his Baidudus, of speaking to Hashem Yisbarach, the Lashon HaMeduber, and having that intimate personal relationship with Hashem Yisbarach, which he saw that this was the site of the Torah of Baal Shem, which the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh received from his father in that Tzavar, those last moments of Rabbi Eliezer's life. This brought him to the Baal Shem Tov. We know Rabbi Nachman heard that this gave the Baal Shem Tov the kaychus, the eslavus, the kaychus, the unbelievable kaychus, to be mekabel upon himself, not only to live that way himself, but to teach that way to the world. And the Rabbi Nachman understood that the Baal Shem Tov drew his neshama into that family, that he should be a direct descendant from the Baal Shem Tov, in order to be'ikr, to reveal this teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, not to be afraid from anything, and to be with Hashem, and to speak to Hashem as Baruch, as you would to a friend, to a father, to a mother. And throughout Rabbi Nachman's short life, in many ways, as we're going to learn, he would remain almost like a little child, even though he was a genius beyond our understanding, and he was a very, very complicated genius. But as we're going to see, as we go through the story of his life, he was the most remarkable combination, integration, synthesis of the most complex person who ever walked in the world, and at the same time being simple like a little boy. And that's one of the most powerful things in his teachings and the stories of his life. And we're going to see that in the first Torah also, the pashtus, the pashtus of a little boy together with the complexity of somebody who was 1,000 years old. So from the time that he was a little boy, he began to spend a great deal of time by himself, wandering in different places. He would tell this later on to Reb Nosson, how he began from the earliest time to speak to Hashem in Yiddish, and how he spent much of his time either wandering in forests, or he had a place, we know, in the roof of his father's house, in the roof there of the house of the Baal Shem Tov, there's like a loft where there was straw on top like they used to have in those places. And he used to go underneath in the straw. And there, even as a little child, he would say many kapilach tehillim, and he was davening. And we have descriptions that he gave over to Rabbi Nosson from those early years of the setbacks that he had even as a child. And we have in the Sichas Aran where Rabbi Nachman said that all he wanted was to be able to develop a more and more intimate relationship with Hashem Yisbarach. And he often felt, even as a little boy, that as much as he was crying out and as much as he was davening, he often felt that the Rebbeinu Shalom was not paying any attention to him, and that his tefillos were not being accepted by Hashem, and that he wasn't zeiche for any iskarvis, that he wasn't zeiche to be close to Hashem. And he spoke about this in great detail, how there were times where for a day or two he couldn't bring himself to speak to Hashem anymore, and he lost his cheshek. And then he would be mechazik himself again. He describes how sometimes in the course of two or three days this would happen 30, 40, 50 times, where he was losing his cheshek and he would be mechazik himself to start again and to begin again to speak to Hashem Yisbarach. And all of these avodas he did with absolute pashtus and in complete and total secrecy. His way was, as a child, that when he was not disappearing someplace, and his parents knew who he was, and therefore his parents allowed him pretty much to do what he wants, and he wasn't looking for an ATM machine or a trip to Miami or anything like that, or Orlando. He was looking for Hashem Yisbarach, and his parents gave him tremendous, I mean, you look at it, it's hard to believe, but he really was pretty much on his own as a little boy. As far as his relationship with the rest of the kids in town, Rabbi Nachman said how as a little boy, even though he was secretly involved in hours upon hours a day of davening and crying out to Hashem and being misbaydeh, when he would go and be with the other children, he would act as any of the other children, not only as any of the other children, but as he told us, as he told Rabbi Nosson, he was particularly mischievous as a child, and this was all an act. And he was doing Maisei Naros. Again, we would see this later in his life, even as an adult, particularly on his trip to Eretz Yisrael, which is filled with such mystery. And we have almost a day-by-day account of his journey to Eretz Yisrael, and how he conducted himself on the boat, and when he got, and when he was in Turkey, the Maisei Naros, the way that he dressed and how he acted. So from the earliest time, he was disguised, and he was leading this double life. This three-year-old, four-year-old boy that was crying out and davening hours and hours a day and throughout the night and being misboided in forests and really not having any friends or any companionship. And then he would spend time playing with the children and acting like all other children. And nobody had any suspicion at all. Adarabba. There was concern among some of the elders of the town that what's going to be with the Baal Shem Tov's grandson? What's going to be with him? He doesn't seem to be getting anywhere. He's just like a little kid, like any other little kid. Rav Nachman said that he had difficulty in cheder, and he was dafka placed into a good cheder, and he had difficulty in cheder because as a little boy, he had a hard time thinking constantly of Hashem. Said that he constantly had the letters of Hashem's name before his eyes, Shivisa Hashem Nagdi Samid, and he was always trying to see in his mind's eyes to see the letters of Hashem's name. And he said because of that, the Rebbe would often get angry and smack him across the head. I guess when he asked him, where are we up to? What pasuk is it? Some of us here would also remember getting pashed like that, but it wasn't because we were thinking about the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. So Rabbi Nachman said that it was hard for him as a child. He was constantly thinking about Hashem's name, and as a result of that, his Rebbe would often get angry at him. And he felt somewhat oppressed in the cheder. He had a very poetic, imaginative heart and mind, and it was hard for him to sit in one place. At some point, as he got a little bit older, it seems by the time he was already a mature 7-8 year old, Rabbi Nachman said that he began in earnest to go through Kol Chelkei HaTorah, to go through the entire Torah. And we know that by the time that he was 10, he was, it seems, completely proficient in all of Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaalpeh, and the Tikkuni Zayir and the Kisvei Ha'ari. By the time before he was Bar Mitzvah, he was completely proficient in all of Torah. There were certain Svarim that he said in particular that he had reviewed hundreds of times as a child. The Reishis Chachma, he said he went through hundreds of times. Other Sifrei Yira, his Bekis, as I mentioned the first time we got together to talk about Rabbi Nachman, his knowledge of Tanakh was a chiddush, was a complete chiddush. His knowledge of Lashon HaKodesh, of Hebrew and Tanakh, was a chiddush, which we're going to see a lot when we learn in Likut Maran. How he used Tanakh, it was clear, though from an early age, it was clear that the entire Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh was munach bekufsei. He had complete, total access to anything in Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. But in public, he conducted himself as a mischievous child. His way of learning, by the way, throughout his life, was with unbelievable zrizus. We're going to at some point talk about his derech halimud. He had a certain way in that he felt that we should learn. And in general, Rabbi Nachman was very much against getting stuck in a certain thing that you don't understand and making yourself meshug and krechsing over one place for a long time. Rabbi Nachman very much believed that it was necessary for every single boy from the earliest age to go through all Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh quickly, and not to be misakev and not to delay yourself for lack of understanding on a deeper level in the initial stages of learning, but that it was important to familiarize oneself and to try to commit as much of the Torah to memory as possible, and then as one would go over and over to deepen one's understanding. He was very much against, he was very much against learning only small amounts of Gemara and small amounts of Mishnayos. Of course, those who have gone through the system know that there are terrible problems with this Bechlal, and even though all the tzaddikim, even in our generation, of Chaim Shmulevitz, Chazanish, and all the tzaddikim were screaming and crying about what's going to be with the boys who are going all the years learning 20, 30 blat, you know, every now and then a few blat gemara, without knowing Tanakh, without knowing Torah Shebaalpeh, without learning Mishnayis and so on. This was something that Rabbi Nachman was very, very much against that way of learning. His learning was with tremendous speed. We'll see later on, when he gets older, the Seder Hayyim, how he would spend his day. It's interesting, when we were leaving Shul Friday night, so somebody was telling me that one of the Rebbeim from one of the local yeshivas was telling me that he had heard from Adam Gadol the learning schedule of Reb Chaim Kanievsky, Zal Gazon Zayin, the daily learning schedule of Reb Chaim Kanievsky. And it's amazing that we have in our generation, you know, a person like that. I'm not going to share with you now, but it's absolutely astounding. The amount of learning that Reb Chaim Kanevsky does in a day. Reb Nachman said about himself, Yibodel Melchaim L'chaim, Reb Nachman said that when everybody would come to shul, and he says that when they were taking out the talisim, when everybody was just getting out the talis, you know, you had that like 30 seconds. So he said, during that time, he went through 4 pages of Shulchan Aruch. When everybody was just like moving around the talis, he went through 4 pages of Shulchan Aruch. Whatever that means. Through 4 pages of Shulchan Aruch when he was just unfolding the talis. And his Seder HaLimud was with Pshitas, he said. Again, I don't know what that means on his level, Pshitas. But he said, especially in the younger years, he said that the Ikka was to go through all of Teresh Shebachsav and all of Teresh Shvapeh, and he was moving at an unbelievable speed. And that was his Derech HaLimud. And he insisted that to his Hasidim that whoever was a Chassid of his should learn this way. And he also stressed very much the importance, besides learning Tanakh and learning through Shas, Mishnayis. He emphasized a great deal Mishnayis, and besides Gemara, he felt it was absolutely essential to learn Shulchan Aruch and the Nisei Kalim, to learn Shulchan Aruch, Magid Avraham Taz, to go through Shulchan Aruch many, many times. And this was something, again, throughout his life that he emphasized. Even in his learning, Rabbi Nachman described how he ran through many setbacks. Again, we don't know exactly what he meant by that. But Rabbi Nachman said that there were times in his early years where he felt the heaviness of learning, that he couldn't bear to open the Gemara. It became unbearable to him to open the Gemara. It felt as something so heavy upon him that he couldn't open the Gemara. And how many times he would cry and beg to Hashem for help, and he would force himself, he said, because the kvedus was ma'id, it was so heavy upon him, the Gemara. And it's not for lack of intelligence, he was a genius, whatever it was, that there was something in his way. And at that time, Rabbi Nachman began to develop another important cornerstone of his teaching, that later on would become formulated in a beautiful, beautiful, amazing Torah. Rabbi Nachman saw that at the beginning of his life, the only way that he could be able to serve Hashem was by remembering that all a person has in his life is the day that he is living. What was yesterday and what's going to be tomorrow, he would say, is a inyan acha lagamre, is a bezunder azach. What I did yesterday and what I'm going to do tomorrow means nothing. All I have in front of me, ein l'adam by lamo, as Rabbi Nachman says, and we'll see that teaching in Hashem in depth, hayoyim im bekalos ishmo. All a Jew has is the day that he is in. Now obviously Rabbi Nachman knows that a person has to do tshuva for what happened in the past, and a person has to look forward to the future. We'll see what that means. Rabbi Nachman saw this, the yesod of all of learning and of being a Jew is never ever to join together what was and to worry about the past and to allow the past to have any impact upon this day, nor is a person to become confused by worrying about what he is going to accomplish in the future. All a person has is the day he's living. And he explained this in the Torah of Hayyim im Mekalei Sheshma, which we'll talk about, which is a teaching that was revealed through Eliyahu HaNavi, to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Chazal, Hayyim. And Rabbi Nachman said that Mashiach would come, as Eliyahu HaNavi said, Hayyim, today, if we would listen to Hashem's voice. And Rabbi Nachman said that the meaning of that is that in order to bring Mashiach, in order to have redemption, in order for any person to achieve his own personal redemption, it depends on this way of living, Hayyim, only today. Hayyim im Mekalos Ishmo. Because if a person, Rabbi Nachman says, if a person thinks about what he went through in the past, and if a person tries to think, how am I going to serve Hashem the rest of my life and not do any avers the rest of my life? That becomes an unbearable burden. How am I going to learn all of Torah? How am I going to be a tzaddik? It becomes something which a person can't bear, and the nature of a person then is to reject it entirely. And Rabbi Nachman said that he felt as a child when he was trying to learn that there were times that he pushed it, couldn't go on. And he strengthened himself with this yisayit of Yiddishkeit, that ein la adam ela oisa yom bilvad, that all a person has is the day that he's living. And he should not think about anything that was yesterday or to think at all about what's going to be the next day. Only the day hayyim. And we'll see. Obviously, we have to understand that on a much deeper level. How can a person live that way with that teaching of Hayoyim, which is a very, very big yisayit in Avodas Hashem? It's the yisayit to a person having, it's the Pesach to a person being able to experience mamash simcha. The simcha of being a Jew is to live in that way of Hayoyim. And with that way, Rabbi Nachman was mechazik himself and said, I don't have to learn this the rest of my life, but today I'm able to learn this. And he went like that from day to day, growing in his knowledge, in his bekiyus, in his depth of Torah. Also, we know that, like the rest of his family, like his parents and grandparents, it was very much a part of his upbringing that he spent long, long amounts of time by the tzin of the Baal Shem Tov, by the grave of the Baal Shem Tov, and he often would sleep there. We know from later on how even during the winter, which our winters are very mild compared to the winters in the Ukraine, that even in the winters, although there were two mikvahs there, there was a mikvah that was indoors that was heated, and there was the choice of going outdoors to the river that's there, or to go, there was also a mikvah that was outside. Rabbi Nachman, even as a little boy, when he would go to the Baal Shem Tov, he would tovel outdoors in ice water. He would often tovel there, and he would spend a great deal of time by the Baal Shem Tov scene. Now they made a beautiful, beautiful oil by the Baal Shem Tov, and a person can go there, you know, any day during the year, and it's heated and it's comfortable. In those days, it was out completely in the open. And despite that, from the time that he was a little child, he would stay there for complete nights, even during the winter. Also, we know that from the earliest time of his life, Rabbi Nachman said, he was rogel bebechiyos. And we're going to talk about that a lot also in his writings. There's probably no other sefer that has as much about crying. The inyan, the koyach of tears. Bechiyah, Rabbi Nachman taught, stands for Beshimcha Yagilun Kol Hayom. In your name I rejoice the entire day. Bechiyah, Beshimcha Yagilun Kol Hayom. And he says that from the beginning, his way was to cry very often. The descriptions that we have from the time that he was a child is that his eyes were constantly red from crying and swollen from crying. For everything that he wanted to accomplish, whether it was in Chumash, in Mishnayis, whether it was to go to push forward to the next inyan that he was doing in life, it was constant bechiyas and tzaakas. And this would be even when he was older. It was something that the Chassidim knew, that Rabbi Nachman, out of nowhere, would begin to cry. In the middle of laughing, in the middle of smiling and saying something, he would start to cry. And he said that one of the reasons that this was so much a part of his life was that he was from the Mishpacha of David HaMelech. And all of the descendants, Rabbi Nachman said, all of the descendants of David HaMelech are brokenhearted. Not sad, Chas V'Shalom. I'm not going to go into the distinction now. Rabbi Nachman despised sadness. He was one of the greatest opponents to sadness that ever lived. But he said that all of the descendants of David HaMelech had a strong inclination to being of a broken heart. And he said that David HaMelech himself was constantly crying. And all one needs to do is to look into Sefer Tehillim. And when you look in Sefer Tehillim, you see right away that such Kapitlech Tehillim, such unbelievable psukim, could only have been said, Rabbi Nachman said, with bechiyas neiros, with awesome crying and tears. And therefore we saw, this was something that also was seen on his illustrious uncle, the Holy Rebbe Rabbarach Meshbitzer, that the Rebbe Rabbarach Meshbitzer also a tremendous amount of bechiyas, not as much by his brother, the Degel Machaneh Ephraim, but more by the Rebbe Baruch Meshbitzer, bechiyas And it was very rare to see Rabbi Baruch Hu actually smiling with panim tzaichakas. Was very rare. Not that he was sad, God forbid, but the way he's described was very serious. His face always had, Rabbi Baruch Mezhbetz had always a very serious ritzini. Many people have described I've heard from people who saw Rabbi Chana Vassim, and also Rabbi Chana Vassim had panim ritzini, a very serious face always. And this was a trademark of the descendants of David HaMelech. At the same time, we know that David HaMelech was referred to in the Zohar Kodesh as Bar Chana HaMelech, as the court jester of the king. And David HaMelech was constantly singing and dancing. And this is part of what seems to be the paradox of Rabbi Nachman's intensity, how complex a person he was, and at the same time, how simple he was. He would also break out in tears when there was some good news about something. When someone would come with a mazel tov, Rabbi Nachman was given to bechias, to crying very often. That's a whole couple of years worth just the inyan of bechias in Rabbi Nachman's tirus, crying. I made up my mind that we would start the first tirus, so let's begin. Some of the things that we just spoke about now are, as I wanted to make clear, these are going to be threads that are woven throughout all of his tirus. There are many, many other tirus that we could have started with in Likkut HaMoharan. It's not in a specific order, but there's a reason why this was put as the first tirus, and therefore I'd be afraid not to begin, even though it's not easy, and there are some shorter and easier tirus. Even when they began to translate the Likkut HaMoharan into English, which there are quite a few volumes already of Likkut HaMoharan in English. When they put out the first one, then after like one or two, they realized it was too overwhelming for people, so they went right away to like volume 11. How they're going to figure out how to fit all that in between, and went to some of the shorter tirus later on that are a little bit easier and shorter, just a few lines to learn. And the first tirus is by no means one of the easier tirus, but if it's the first tirus, it means that it's an obligation for us to begin with it. Another fascinating thing about Rabbi Nachman's Torah is that each Torah has a story behind it. It's not like when you open up another Sefer and you have no idea, maybe sometimes you know the year that it was said. Like, you look at Sfasemes, it says when he said it. Shem Yishmul, it says what year it was said. But with Rabbi Nachman's Torah, not only do we know the year, we know the exact day and the exact hour. And usually it's connected to something that was going on in town or in the world at that time. And Rabbi Nachman would stop and all of a sudden would start to say Torah. So it's not the typical Torah that was said at Shavuot Shudas. These are the Torahs that were often said while Rabbi Nachman was walking someplace. He would stop. Or somebody would come and say something about what was going on. Rabbi Nachman would often ask, what's happening in the world? What's going on in the world? And then they would tell him a little bit what was going on, some current events, and then Rabbi Nachman would begin to say Torah on that inyan. So we have Torahs that, by Rabbi Nachman's Torahs, whenever it's possible, it's important to know what was the Torah in response to. So it seems that this first Torah, Ashrei Smi Meidarach, HaHolchem Meteres Hashem, our friend Yosef Kaduna made a little bit of a niggun on the first sentence. Happy and fortunate are those whose way is perfect to walk with the Torah of Hashem. The background of this Torah is that there was a chassid that came to Rabbi Nachman crying and complaining that he feels that as much as he tries to daven, that his tefillahs are not accepted by Hashem. That Hashem doesn't care for his tefillahs. Now we learned that a few moments ago Rabbi Nachman felt this as a child as well. And even sometimes in his older years, we'll talk about that. So this Yid came to Rabbi Nachman crying that he was trying to daven as much as he could and to put all of his thoughts and feelings into the tefillos, and he felt that the tefillos are simply animus kablos klal, that God's not interested in them. I'm sure that we could all identify with that. So Ibn Ahmed told him, he came to Ibn Ahmed to ask what to do, an Eitzah. And Ibn Ahmed told him to learn a lot of Mishnayos and Gemara. You know, that's like one of the Eitzahs that when you go to Tzadik and you get that Eitzah, you want your money back, right? You were hoping for like some quick fix. Like, you know, the mezuzah in the basement's not good, see what you can do. Something like that. And then you go to Tzadik and he says, no, I want you to learn a lot of Mishnayos and Gemara. Oh, no. That's like, what kind of Eitzah is that? Right? So this Yid went and he poured his kaychas into learning Mishnayos and Gemara. And he came back a couple of weeks later to Ibn Achman. He said that he doesn't have a strong head and it's hard for him to learn Mishnayos and Gemara. He's not having an easy time with it. And he doesn't find that his davening is getting any better with this program. So what should I do? So Ibn Achman told him, Afal Pichein, nevertheless, go and learn more Mishnayos and Gemara. Force yourself, no matter what, to learn Mishnayos and Gemara. And in the end, if you force yourself as many times as it takes, and this is what Rabbi Nachman himself went through, he said it will be clear, it will begin to become clear to you. The words that he used was Ki'or HaShemesh, like the light of the sun. And he was silent for a while, and he said then, and that's going to be very important, the light of the sun. It's a very important part of this first Torah, as we'll see. And then he was quiet, and he said, what does a Jew have in this world? And what can a person do in this world? Ella, only one thing. To daven, to learn, and nocham also daven. And again, daven. That's all a Jew has in this world. Daven, learn, and then daven. That's the background. And from that was born this Torah, which Rabbi Nachman began to teach after the Chassid left. And the question, of course, is, how did Rabbi Nachman answer this horrible problem that Yid had, that all of us have in life? And that's what we're going to learn about in this Torah. How did Rabbi Nachman help him? What was killing this fellow was that he felt that as much as he davens, that the Baruch Shem doesn't care about his davening, is not listening. That Hashem is not makabel his tefillos. And Rabbi Nachman's Eitzah was learn. And afterwards he said, learn and daven nochama, learn. And in the end it will become clear to you like the sun. So let's at least start the first sentence until. Da. There's a whole Torah of why is it that sometimes Rabbi Nachman says, he begins with the word da. The Kabbalah by the Chassidim go all the way back to the beginning of to the beginning by Rabbi Nachman was when he says da, means it's a Torah that's coming from Atzilus, from the highest world. When he says, and you shall know. Da. Ka'idei ha-Torah in this kablam kol ha-tfilus v'kol ha-bakoshu shal ne-mavakshu n-mispalim. Rabbi Nachman says, and you should know that it's through Torah and only with the koyach of Torah. This kablam kol ha-tfilus v'kol ha-bakoshu, that all of our tfilus, all of our davening, and all of our requests, Shalom of Akshim and Mispalvin, that we ask for and that we daven for. We don't have time to go to all the diyukim that we mamish could spend the rest of our lives on this. I mean, he switches tefillos and bakashas and mevakshim mispalvin. Why does he switch that? That's not for now. But you see, tefillos and bakashas and mevakshim mispalvin. And what's the difference? Tefillos and bakashas. We understand the simple pshat means that tefillos are the tefillos that are arranged that we have in the siddur, and bakoshes are the personal requests. So Ibn Achman says that it's only through Torah that all of our tefillos and bakashas that are mevakshim mispalin, that they will be accepted by Hashem. And now he introduces a word that is the site of this entire Torah, v'achein, v'achashiv v'sheyisal nis'alav nis'rayim b'fnei kol misha tzricha. And the chein, the grace, the beauty, and the charm. Chein is when something is charming. When you say a person is b'cheint, we'll talk more about that in a little while. The chein and the chashivas, she Yisrael, through the study of Torah. The chein, the charm and the grace, and the chashivas, and the importance, she Yisrael, of the Jewish people and of every Jew, is in this olive and this rhyme. It's elevated, it's uplifted. Bifnei kol misha tzricha, before all who he needs. What does that mean? It means that there's something in the world that's called chein. And there are people in the world who have natural chein. Almost all children, all little children have that natural chein. As we grow up and we become a little bit more street smart, so the chein begins to disintegrate. When a person has chein, the greatest koyach of a person who's bachent is that when a person who has chein asks you for something, it's very hard for you to say no. It's very hard. Chein opens many, many doors. And Rabbi Nachman says there are certain Jews who are mitzim chein be'enei Hashem. Who Hashem, when Hashem looks at them, they're charming in Hashem's eyes. Not only in the eyes of people, but in the eyes of Hashem, as we say in benching. Nitzah chein v'seichel toiv, chein v'seichel toiv be'enei Elokim v'odom. And we'll see in this Torah the inyan of chein and seichel toiv, be'enei Elokim v'odom, in the eyes of God and the eyes of men. We spoke about the connection between Rabbi Nachman's name and Zayin Nachamenu and Noach. The question that Rabbi Nachman deals with in this Torah, and we'll continue with the next time, the question is, is it just a matter of being born that way, that a person just has a certain look or a certain way about him or about her that makes that person bachent? Or is there some way that you could get that? That you could become a Baal Chein? And the answer to that question is extremely important for us, and our lives depend on it. Because Rabbi Nachman teaches, and we're going to learn, that when you have Chein, then Hashem is Baruch wants to do everything you ask of Him. Bifnei kol misha tzrichin means you're bachent in the eyes of the world, and you could achieve that in the eyes of the world, Jews and lahavdol non-Jews. But more importantly, there is a way that a person can become a Baal Chein in God's eyes. And when a person is a Baal Chein in Hashem's eyes, then no matter what other things are going on, this person has a way, somehow, to get what he needs and to get what he wants. And Hashem is memali mishalas libay, that Hashem responds to his requests. Like a child who has unbelievable chein and cries out to his father, to his mother, that even though the parents were determined before, there's no way in the world that this is going to be, 10 seconds later the kid's dancing off with whatever he wanted. So Rabbi Nachman is going to teach us in this Torah that there is a way that each and every one of us can become bachent. And that way, as we're going to learn, is through Torah. Through the study of Torah, but particularly, as we're going to learn, a unique and powerful way of approaching Torah and of using Torah in understanding our lives and looking at the world. So we're going to be learning a lot about Torah, about Tefillah. In this Torah, we're going to be learning a lot about Chein and about Chanukah, because the holy name of Chanukah is Chein Shuvos Chein Chein La. The holy name of Chanukah is there's no other time that says bachent in the entire year as Chanukah where a Jew can get whatever he asks for. So we're going to try to get ready that we should know a little bit to be able to daven properly on Chanukah.